If your energy level and health are not where they should be, tune into Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with Dr. Ann Deatley. Our program will showcase experts from the field of energy medicine. And most importantly, we'll show you how to repattern and optimize your energy flow for optimal health and wellness. Now, here is Dr. Ann Deatley.
You have tuned in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with Dr. Ann Deatley, the Radiant Energy Doctor. Energy medicine is a method of working with the body's energy systems to help create balance for optimal health and wellness. And energy medicine is also a way to tap into the body's wisdom, the innate ability of the body to heal itself. Remember, everything is energy, and energy is everywhere. Energies control how you feel, what you think, and how you live your life. Einstein put it this way: energy is all there is. The topic today is holoenergetic healing with love. Healing with love energy has made a significant difference in the medical practice of Leonard Lasko. He doesn't recommend replacing traditional medicine with holoenergetic healing or the healing with love, but using it as a complement. Unconditional love for self and others is a profound tool for facilitating the body's natural healing processes. Dr. Lasko says, love, at its deepest level, is the awakening to oneness. When loving presence flows through the heart, it shifts the vibration of the inner energy body into resonance with your essential nature, with the truth of who you really are, and with the truth of what is. It is love that links form with essence. So Dr. Leonard Lasko, who's a medical doctor, is a life fellow of American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, a founding member of American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine, and former Scientific Advisory Board member of Institute of Heart Math. A Stanford-trained physician, Dr. Lasko has studied the healing power of love for 33 years. He coined the term holoenergetic healing, healing with the energy of the whole. Dr. Lasko found that it takes energy to maintain the appearance of separation. As we attain wholeness, this energy is released and can be directed to facilitate our body's healing response. Holoenergetic healing principles are presented in this breakthrough book, Healing with Love. Dr. Lasko teaches this healing process to professionals and lay people, and is a consultant in behavioral and energy medicine. Experimentally, Dr. Lasko showed that conscious intention and love changes the molecular configuration and properties of water and the physical structure of DNA. To find out more about what Dr. Lasko does, you can visit him at http://www.lasko.net. That's L-A-S-K-O-W. So www.lasko.net. Welcome, Leonard.
Hi, Ann. Pleasure to be here to speak to you today.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure because you have such a fascinating topic to discuss, and your book is just wonderful. I highly recommend this book to anybody that's in the healing arts or the healing field. It opens up your mind to many, many dimensions that we don't even think about on a regular basis, and it just was fascinating. So I so appreciate, I have such deep gratitude for you for writing this book and really putting your ideas on paper and to share with the world, and especially coming from this medical background, you really have been able to bridge two very different worlds. And this is so impactful for those of us who are practicing holistic health.
Thank you. Yes, bridging the world of science and spirituality. Yeah, that's been very fruitful for me. That's been very impactful for me in my life.
I'm sure it has. Now, so let's start with how you discovered holoenergetic healing.
Well, you know, people are very interested in that subject because it represents a major transformation in my life. I was in a very busy practice of obstetrics and gynecology in San Francisco. And it was in the mid-70s I attended a retreat. And during the retreat, I was meditating. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I was in a dark room by myself. And suddenly it seemed as if someone had turned on the lights. I was alone, and that was a surprise. So I opened my eyes, and the room was still dark. I closed my eyes again, and then there was this inner luminosity.
Wow.
Yeah, and then suddenly I heard a voice. I felt a presence, and I heard a voice inside my head. And this voice, I say voice, but that's the only word that I can use to describe something that's indescribable, said with an incredible clarity, "Your work is to heal with love."
Wow.
Tears started to roll down my cheeks. The hair stood up in the back of my head, and I silently said, "Oh, so I'm worthy?" And this voice said, "You are no more or less worthy than anyone else. Your work is to heal with love." And I knew that it was true, but I didn't know what it meant. When I had said, "Oh, so I'm worthy," that was my little egoic self, the conditioned mind that came in and said, "Oh, you mean I might be good enough for this?" This presence would have nothing to do with ego. That was pure, clear truth that it was representing and communicating. And so I didn't know what healing and what love meant in that context at that time. But that revelation was the key to essentially the rest of my life, because then I, not immediately, but eventually, dedicated myself to exploring what healing with love really meant, or what was meant by that phrase, healing with love. And so that's how that started. Then the rest of it was very interesting because, well, for a while I didn't speak about this revelation. It was ineffable. It was so sacred and impactful. And, but 9 months later, I was at another retreat, and I had as a roommate, a young man who, composer of children's songs, who, as it turned out, had metastatic lung cancer, and it had metastasized to his kidneys as well. And, in the middle of the first night, I heard him having difficulty breathing. Sounded like he was in pain, so I got up and went over to his bed, and I sat down. I said, "Can I help?" And he said, "Anything, anything, doc." And I didn't have any medication. And then just spontaneously, I visualized this radiant ball of light like the sun above my head, and a beam of light descending through the top of my head down to my heart. It overflowed up my shoulders, down my arms, and I put my hands on both sides of his chest, just recreated this radiant sun between my hands, and just held my hands there for a few minutes, maybe 2-3 minutes. And then I felt him take some deep breaths, and he said, "Oh, thanks, doc. The pain is gone."
Wow.
And he slept well that night. And then the morning when he woke up, he said to me, "Hey, doc, you know, you're really a healer." And that's when I recalled healing with love. What happened that night? I knew that there was nothing that I personally did. You know, this was something that came through me.
Right.
To him. But there was no doubt that something profound had happened that night. And then he was fine for the next 3 days of the retreat. And then we hugged. He left. He went back to Boston to receive chemotherapy, and I thought that would be the last that I saw of him, because he had 10 baseball-sized lesions in one lung, 7 in another. One kidney was completely obstructed with cancer. The other was 50% functional.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, 10 years later, I was at a concert. Here was a man singing children's songs. And then he started to tell his story. And I said, could this be him? And in fact, it was. Mm. And after the concert, I went over to him and I said, do you remember me? And he said, Doc, you pulled me through that night when I was going under. And we hugged and there were tears. So it's an amazing story. He had what's called a spontaneous remission. That was about 6 weeks after we had worked together. So I don't say that that had anything to do with what transpired, and it could have. We just don't know.
Right.
But 6 weeks later, he had a spontaneous remission. And so that was that. But I actually went back to my practice after my experience with him at this retreat. And I decided to selectively explore with patients, knowing that the most important thing was to do no harm, either by omission or commission, not withholding any known effective medical treatment or doing anything that was knowingly harmful. And I started to get some amazing results in my explorations. But I realized that it's very difficult to continue to work with people if I really want to explore what the nature of love was and its impact on healing, because there are so many variables when you work with human beings.
Absolutely.
So many variables. Mm. And the placebo effect, of course.
Of course, yeah.
So that was where you have 30 to even 50% of people who have a strong belief that something is going to help or harm can be affected by that belief system. And there's a lot of information now about the biology of belief and the influence of epigenetics and environmental influences.
Right.
Genetic expression, including the beliefs. But I knew somehow that there was something beyond belief. There was something between my consciousness, or the consciousness that I am, and the consciousness of whatever I was focusing on, that was somehow the key to this healing with love. And so that's essentially what started me on the laboratory research and such. But so that's the story basically of how I got involved in that. Because if you pull out a textbook of medicine and you look up the word love, at least a number of years ago, the last time I did it, you wouldn't find the word love in the index of the textbook of medicine.
Yeah.
Maybe today things are changing. I would hope so.
I hope so too, but my guess is that they still haven't included that as a method of healing.
And yet it's the oldest and most profound method of healing that there is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's, you actually devised a new model for healing, which is just wonderful. And you call it holoenergetic healing, as I introduced in the introduction. So why don't you tell the listeners what you mean by holoenergetic healing?
Yeah. Well, what inspired me was it was healing with the energy of the whole that was greater than the sum of its parts. And what I realized early on was that, The most illnesses, not all illnesses, but most illnesses and all suffering and all distress stemmed from a sense of separation. That's what I started to notice in the patients that I began selectively working with. Mm-hmm. They had a sense of separation of one part of themselves from another. Mm-hmm. That was too painful to hold in consciousness, or a sense of separation from others or from their environment, and most importantly, a sense of separation from their essential nature. So I developed this model that I called holoenergetic healing, which brings people back into wholeness. It brings people back into wholeness. And what I did in this process was I developed this methodology to allow people to follow the problem back to its experiential roots, to its core, to its critical incident. It could have been a time when they were in their mother's womb. Very commonly, I found that.
Wow.
Or during birth itself, or right after birth. And then these patterns, this conditioning that was experienced in this environment, this prenatal environment or postnatal environment, is repeated in early childhood. So they can go back to these experiential roots and then re-experience it, resonate with it, and then release it at its core, at its root core, and then replace it with that which is more in alignment with their essential nature. So in other words, there were four R's associated with it, I call: recognize what the problem is and that you want to change it, resonate with the issue instead of denying it or disowning it, or projecting it onto others or suppressing it, and then release it at its core, mm-hmm. and replace it with something that's in alignment with your soul and your essential nature.
Wow.
So that's the simple way. It's not so simple the way I just described it, but that's the simple way that that this model came into being.
Beautiful. We have to stop for commercial, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Why do people behave the way they do? The study of human behavior is one of the most interesting facets of life. Human behavior gets played out in a limitless number of ways. Now, there's a radio program that explains the why and the how of what we do. Human Behavior, What a Trip, is hosted by Dr. Jonathan Brower and will include interesting guests as well as call interaction from people like you. Let's have fun with this together. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you living your vital life? One that is showcasing you at your full potential? There are many issues that stand in the way of most people achieving their full potential. We will discuss these issues and how to overcome them each week on The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential, with host Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Living the vital life often requires that we trust our own intuitive voice and that we view illness or life challenges as calls to action, to reconnect with the deeper urges of our spirit or soul. Tune in Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Dietley. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Dietley or her guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to radiantenergydoctor@gmail.com. Now, back to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health.
You are back with Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, and we are talking today to Dr. Leonard Lasko, who devised a new model for healing, healing with love. Okay, Dr. Lasko, let's go back to that last thought we were talking about, connecting to your prenatal state. How do you do that? How did you discover that?
Well, as I worked with people using the what I call the tracing process, the holoenergetic tracing process, where they trace back some problem. It could be a physical, emotional, a mental belief-associated problem, or some kind of even a spiritual problem where they feel they're separate from source. As we trace that back, I was surprised initially at how frequently people were able to go back to a time before birth when they were in their mother's womb and they had a fear that arose, a fear that represented a sense of separation from their essential nature. And this occurred in a precognitive, preverbal state. And at that time, there was no sense of separation from the mother. So whatever the mother was feeling was assumed by the fetus, the developing fetus, to be their own feelings. Mm-hmm. So if the mother had some concerns about being an adequate mother, if it was the first child, if the mother had some fears about financial security or whatever it was, as well as, you know, some physical concerns about what would happen during birth or after birth, this was picked up subliminally by the fetus and was just assumed to be the feelings that the fetus carried the rest of their life until they brought that to awareness and recognized it wasn't theirs. Now, as it turns out, it wasn't just the mother's feelings. Mm-hmm. It was also possibly any feelings that the father may have had. For example, if the father wanted a boy and this was a girl, mm-hmm. That was picked up. And then the feeling is, well, maybe I'm not good enough as I am. So either I'll hide and be a wallflower, or I'll just show that I'm better than or as good as any boy. In other words, compensatory factors.
Right.
So it wasn't only the influence of the father and the immediate family, the grandmother, grandfather, mm-hmm. but also the collective that was existing at the time. So all of these influences conditioned the consciousness of the developing being, essentially, and influenced and drew to this being vibrationally the very beliefs that they were carrying with them, because these beliefs exist as an energy field that has a vibratory signature. And when something has a similar signature, it's attracted to them. And so circumstances of their life prove out those belief systems until they can be dissolved and released. So that's part of the work that we do, with these belief systems. I call these belief systems essentially veils.
Veils, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and they're veils that represent blockages and
limitations.
There are other veils. We start to judge ourselves, judge others. Shoulds, should nots, these are all, there are belief systems, mm-hmm. Attachments and aversions that we may have.
So do you think that a lot of our veils or limitations actually come through our prenatal state? I mean, as early as that?
Yes, and you see, these...
But not all of them.
Well, no, I mean, yeah. The original veil is our unconscious identification with the thinking mind as our thoughts and feelings and sense perceptions. In other words, we identify the thinking mind as who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that constitutes our sense of self. And that unconscious identification is the primary conditioner, and it's sometimes called the ego,
mm-hmm.
this separative mind or the conditioned mind that we call the ego, is the primary veil. And then that's expressed as I mentioned, attachments and aversions and judgments and interpretations, it plays out as limiting beliefs and
in our behaviors,
even treasured wounds, even our identification with our story, story of betrayal or abandonment, story of long lost loved ones, story of pain and suffering and illness and loss. When we start to identify who we are with that, then
that's what we attract in our lives.
Yeah, who we are is the awareness of all of this. But when we identify who we are with the content, which is changing, variable, and it was born and it will eventually die as the body dies, then we start to set up our suffering in this life.
Mm.
You know, we can have pain, but we don't have to suffer with the pain. Pain and pleasure come with the physical form. But suffering is the emotional concomitant that comes along with the pain.
Mm. Yeah.
And pain is just part of the life process. But suffering is the emotional component that's added to the pain or the difficulty that we find ourselves in. And again, that difficulty that we find ourselves in is called life.
Yeah.
Suffering.
Yeah.
But the suffering is associated with our belief systems and our conditioning.
Mm-hmm. So our conditioning or our belief systems would then be an indication of whether we thought that we are separate.
Exactly, exactly. And that's, you see, the fear comes from the sense of separation. It comes from the sense of other. As soon as we have a sense of other, fear comes in. And that's why, Jerry Jampolsky's book, Love is Letting Go of Fear, is one way of talking about that. But another way is that when we know that there is truly at the level of consciousness, no other. At the level of consciousness, there's only one. When we know that, then a fear dissolves,
mm-hmm.
and what's left is love, and that all human behavior, all human activity is in that context either a call for love or an expression of love.
Interesting.
Yeah, because love is the awareness of oneness, as you said in the beginning of the show when you introduced me, is that awareness of oneness and more than that, there's an energy associated with it. It's the urge to merge, as I put it. You know, desire, love has this impulse to move into oneness with the object of its desire. So on the simplest level, you can say, I love hamburgers. And you want to merge with that hamburger. You want to eat it. And on the more sublime level, I love God. Or mm-hmm. beyond that, I love Source, because God has many connotations to different,
right.
different
exactly.
peoples. So I like the word Source. I prefer Source. But I love Source, meaning I want to become one with Source. And then there's a dissolution into that oneness.
Mm-hmm. So how do people connect with their essential nature?
Yeah. The first thing to know is that it's beyond understanding.
Okay.
And that you're never really other than your essential nature. So one issue that we have is that people are searching to connect with their essential nature, which is what they already are, and so they're like a dog chasing its own tail. So that's part of the issue. The second thing is to understand what we mean by essential nature. But even if I were to describe it, which I will in a moment, you cannot truly understand it. You can only be it. This is the peace beyond understanding that Christ spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a love beyond understanding. But the way that I can describe the indescribable is only through only through a metaphor, you could say. And one of the common metaphors to describe our essential nature is to describe it in terms of an ocean. And Thich Nhat Hanh had a beautiful quote about this, which I like, when he describes this loving presence, which is our essential nature. And he says, a wave on the ocean has a beginning and an end, a birth and a death. But the Heart Sutra tells us the wave is empty. The wave is full of water, but it's empty of a separate self. A wave is a form which has been made possible thanks to the existence of wind and water. If a wave only sees its form with its beginning and end, it will be afraid of birth and death. But if the wave sees that it is water, identifies itself with the water, then the wave will be emancipated from birth and death. Each wave is born and is going to die, but the water is free from birth and death. So again, this ocean of awareness that he's referring to, you know, takes form, but it's not the form. That's what we tend to focus on, because our sense perceptors and our mind are geared toward focusing on the form. And we rarely are aware of the space in which the form arises and subsides.
Mm.
But the space is ever present. When we walk into a room, we're not aware usually of the space. If it's a room that's got furniture in it and other things, we focus on the furniture.
Mm.
When we look at a page of written material, we focus on the whatever is on the page, with pictures or words, but we're not aware of the page. And when we speak, we're not aware of the stillness or the silence that's ever present when we're not speaking or making sound. And it's not what's being looked at. It's who's doing the looking that represents our essential nature. And that's what we would call consciousness. And prior to consciousness is this ocean of awareness that has no qualities or distinctions. So it can't be known, because there's no knower, there's nothing to be known, and there's no knowing. And that's sometimes called the absolute. And somehow, mysteriously, beyond knowing,
mm-hmm.
the absolute became aware of itself. And that created the first wave, awareness of awareness. And that first wave is sometimes called I am, or it's sometimes called being. And it's also sometimes called consciousness. Awareness, aware of itself, creates consciousness. It also creates the first movement, the first vibration, and it is sometimes called light, the light of consciousness. And when this awareness of awareness looks within itself, it dissolves back into awareness. On the other hand, if it turns and looks out and says, I am aware, now it's not just the I am of pure beingness or consciousness, but it's I am aware. And then suddenly subject, I am aware, object creates duality, creates mind. Mm. And that's how manifestation occurs. So everything in this way that I'm explaining it is created from consciousness, arises from consciousness.
Wow.
So, yeah. So everything arises from and is made of consciousness, including the bacteria that I look at under a microscope, including the DNA, including the water itself in the metaphor that of Thich Nhat Hanh's. Everything is made of consciousness. And when we can relate to one another at the level of consciousness, we relate as one. We come back to the oneness because there is only one consciousness. A rock is also has as its essential nature consciousness.
Absolutely.
Einstein said that, and you mentioned, he said all is energy. And he also said that that matter and energy are just condensed space.
Mm.
It's space that's moving or it's space that's condensed. Well, he was using the word space. We could use the term consciousness instead of space. So, you know, it's all compatible.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting. We have to stop for another commercial, so we'll be right back.
Okay.
Real Life Solutions, Voice America Health and Wellness.
In your family, what is most important to you? Is it health? Relationships? How about getting along better with your kids or your parents? Maybe it has to do with losing pounds or gaining financially. Whatever the problems you face in your family, you'll want to tune in to Family First with your host, author, and speaker, Randy Rolfe. Since 1985, Randy has become the foremost expert on matters concerning the family, and she can help you. Family First airs live every Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you figured out what's not working in your sex life? Could you use a little help? Join your host, Tamaran, for Let's Figure It Out Intimately. Tamaran has had both highs and lows in her sex life. She uses her experiences to teach you some basic techniques on how to create more fun, intimacy, and pleasure. Her guests also come from the sexual health and wellness industry. And together, Tamaran and her guests will help you get the sex life you've always longed for. Let's Figure It Out Intimately airs live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Dietley. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Dietley or her guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to radiantenergydoctor@gmail.com. Now, back to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health.
You are back with Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with Dr. Ann Dietley, and we're talking to Dr. Leonard Lasko, who has written the book Healing with Love, and I totally recommend it, so recommend this book. It's amazing. And we're going to just start talking about unconditional love right now because I think that's one of the most important topics. So tell us what you think about unconditional love and how that fits in with all this beyond knowing concept.
Wonderful. Well, here's something. When I made the decision, when I started working with patients and I was getting all of these significant healing results with people with diabetes and hypertension and cancer and rheumatoid arthritis, etc. And I was thinking about all of the variables that are involved. I decided because I wanted to explore the nature of healing with love, I decided to work with single-celled organisms, because then we wouldn't be dealing with the placebo effect and belief systems. So I went into the laboratory. I was working in San Francisco at the time, and I had friends who were scientists at a number of major universities in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so I started working with a number of these scientists. And initially I worked with a scientist who specialized in a particular kind of bacteria called Salmonella, which causes dysentery in humans. And in preparation for doing this work, I was looking at the bacteria through a microscope, and the bacteria was in a petri dish. And while I was looking at the bacteria, suddenly I had an epiphany. I had this realization that the bacteria was created by the same source that created me. The same creator created both of us. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, see, I realized suddenly, oh, it was only my conditioned filter of awareness, of consciousness, essentially, this conditioned filter of consciousness, that I was observing this bacteria and called it a pathogen, a disease-producing organism, and that we generally attack and want to kill. And when I had that realization, these filters in my consciousness in that moment just dropped away, and there was only this consciousness relating to the consciousness of the bacteria I was looking at under the microscope. So in effect, the two consciousnesses became the one consciousness, and we were resonating together, in effect, just like two tuning forks of the same frequency mm-hmm. resonate together and become entrained to one another. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered that when I introduced an intention in that field of connectedness, of attunement, of oneness, that intention had direct impact. And the intention that I introduced was just to reduce your growth rate, rather than say, I want to destroy you, because I just acknowledged its right to exist. Mm-hmm. And I found that we could reduce the growth rate by 50% relative to controls. But the important thing here was that when I unconditionally accepted its existence exactly as it was, I realized this unconditioned acceptance of this bacteria exactly as it was another way of talking about unconditional love.
Mm.
Because if you were unconditionally accepted right in this moment,
mm-hmm.
exactly as you are, with no changes, what would you feel? You would feel unconditionally loved. You may not ever have felt unconditionally accepted exactly as you are by another, or most importantly, by yourself.
Mm.
But what you would feel is unconditionally loved.
And that's a very high vibration.
It's the very high vibration, the highest vibration.
Right.
And so once I had this realization, I started to develop a variety of methodologies to bring this about. And the tracing process was one of the first steps that we described earlier. Another one is the forgiveness process that includes a very profound aspect of forgiving yourself for all that you did that you may have felt ashamed of or guilty about, that you may have felt that you did that was unloving to others, and especially that was unloving to yourself. So the important thing is to forgive yourself for what you were feeling unloving about. And when you can do that, when you can totally and completely and unconditionally forgive yourself, in other words, release attachment to the story of the past, release your identification with the past, be totally in the present, loving yourself exactly as you are, and this process allows you to do that, this forgiveness process allows you to do that, then you're home. Then you're able to be who you really are. You can resonate as your essential nature. And so this is what I've been developing and working with people with. And I'm, in fact, writing a new book on forgiveness now, because I feel that's one of the major portals to unconditionally loving yourself, which leads you to profound inner peace and joy and happiness, mm-hmm. as well as self-love.
Right.
And most importantly, and the freedom to finally be who you are,
right,
through this self-acceptance and love.
And to live the life you're supposed to lead, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
and you see, the supposed to is a little tricky as a term, because supposed to can come from, you know, your religion, your society, your culture. But if you live the life that you're
connected to your essential self.
Yeah. Your essential self will dictate to you the life that you're to lead. Like, I didn't know that my work was to heal with love. I was fortunate to have that revelation.
Right.
And then I went ahead and I wound up writing a book, the title of which was Healing with Love. And initially, my editors said, no, you can't use that title. It's too new agey, and so it's too common. And I just said, it has to be that title, even though they, you know, had the rights to change the name if they wanted to.
Right.
Because they were publishing the book. I insisted on it. I said, no, it's got to be Healing with Love. And in fact, they finally gave in and said, okay, all right.
It had to be that, because that was your inspiration.
That was it.
That, so you had to use that. Yeah.
I had to do it.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get that. Okay. So you had this, you did this experiment with Salmonella bacteria in the lab. So when you connected to that bacteria and you set the intention for that bacteria to slow its growth down or have a reduced growth rate, did you hold the plate where the bacteria was growing, or, you know, what did you do physically? I mean, I know what you were doing in your mind and your heart.
Well, I just, with the bacteria, I just projected that intention to reduce the growth rate of the bacteria. Subsequently, I started to work with cancer cells that were grown in tissue culture, in petri dishes, in tissue culture, and I would create the same field of unconditioned love.
Mm-hmm.
First, I would accept them exactly as they are, rather than, which is what usually happens with cancer cells, attacking them.
Mm.
And so that I could connect with them, because when you love something, you're connecting with that which you love. You become, in effect, resonantly one with them.
Mm.
That doesn't mean, by the way, that everything you resonate with is something you love, because you can resonate with anger as well. You know, you can have tuning forks resonating with each other, so to speak. But so you know, but every time that you're truly moving into oneness with something, you resonance is necessary.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can resonate. You know, two angry people can resonate with each other, and but they're not connected in other ways in broader ways to the whole, to the one. And right. So people get very confused.
They
about,
can be disconnected from the one and from each other. And from each other.
Well, two Nazis could really love each other, but they are disconnected from the whole. And that's the problem there.
Right.
And so there's a lot of confusion with love. There's love within the duality, and then there's love between duality and unity, and then there's a love that simply dissolves into the one. Mm. And then it's beyond love itself. But in order to come back from the one, which is beyond description and experience and distinction, we use words such as love, peace, freedom, joy, bliss, etc.
Harmony.
Harmony, source, stillness. You know, there are all these words to describe the indescribable, and they're different for different people because when they come back with some of the conditioning of the mind, whatever schooling they've had or experiences they've had, they express through those experiences.
Okay, I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop. This has been fascinating. We'll get you on again. And I just want to tell everybody you can visit www.lasco.net for more information and fascinating
opportunities. And also, by the way, I am giving seminars and I do consultations. Just want to mention that.
Oh, very good. Wonderful.
And so, mentoring if people are interested.
So we're going to leave this with harmony and oneness. Connect to your source, connect to your essential nature, and live radiantly. Thank you very much, Dr. Lasco, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sure.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with Dr. Ann Dietley. Please join us again next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Thank you again for tuning in.